Cabernet tends to be the sort of Errol Flynn of the grape varieties.
The most expensive beer in history.
People will turn around to me and say, oh, I'm just making gin while I wait for my whiskey to get ready.
Because wine is an adventure.
Conventional winemakers who just condemn all natural wine as faulty.
The prestigious title of Sake Samurai.
Looking at whiskey in more of an artful culinary way.
They kind of look at it as a novelty more than anything. The guy from the rock bands is making wine.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine, and spirits and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today. Julie Otter founded Ottercraft Distilling with her brother, Edouard, in 2019. While Edouard has extensive drinks industry experience, Julie's background is as an executive in the fashion and beauty sectors. Most recently, she was CEO of Australian fashion label Sass & Bide, and she's done stints at MAC Cosmetics, Jeans West, and sleepwear brand Peter Alexander. There's a lot of lifers in the drinks industry, people who get into it early on in their careers and then never leave. As such, I always find it interesting to speak with people from different career backgrounds who bring a new perspective on things, which is exactly what we get from Julie in this episode. I started by asking Julie how she came to the decision to leave a successful career and take the plunge into launching a startup in another industry.
My brother Edouard was basically creating whiskey under his house as a proof of concept. And we're quite tight as a family and spend quite a bit of time together. And I just found that whenever I went to his house, I literally never made it past his garage. He'd just be there, he'd stop me, we'd be chatting about the business, showing me what he's doing, and it was almost by osmosis that I felt like I was starting to understand an industry that, you're quite right, I don't have a background in. So my background is fashion and beauty, predominantly in more in the management side of things, growing brands, building brands, overseeing all parts of the business and working locally and internationally. So, and usually in the premium space as well. So cut back to time with my brother, Edward, and we were just sort of talking about what he was doing a lot. I had actually left my last CEO role and I was consulting at the time. I was consulting for some equity groups and for some private businesses as well and for some designers. And we just sort of, almost as a joke, started talking about working together, because I think working with family is not always that common as well when it's brother and sister and those sorts of things. So we just sort of started talking about it, and then I was actually being offered a role in New York, and it was really, well, if we're actually serious about this, and we'd sort of been joking and talking about it for, you know, a couple of months or close to a year really. And it was really like, well, if I take the role in New York, I'm not going to move in to doing this business with him. And it was really, how serious are we? And then quite spookily, we thought we're actually quite serious. And then we spent about a year working on it together. I was still consulting. Edward was still working. It was very much part-time, but, you know, really sort of just making sure that the parameters of how we wanted to build the brand were aligned. That's really the most important thing. And also the position of the brand was really important. So by that I mean I understand the premium and the mid space really well, and I just felt that I could utilize my skills and bring them into what we're doing, and thus OCD was born.
And going back prior to when, you know, Edward was playing around in the garage, did you already have an interest in drinks as well, at least as a consumer?
Yeah, I mean, my interest was really, everything I've really learned about the industry has come from Edward, to be honest, because that's been his background pretty much his whole career. So he's always worked, you know, in hospitality or had something to do with it. So,
and he ended up working for one of the big suppliers.
Yeah, yeah. He was with Pernod Ricard. Yeah. He's worked with Schweppes. He's worked for some really big players and had some really interesting roles. So my understanding and education on wine and champagne and spirits has all been from him. So I've been very spoilt in that way, and that what I enjoy, you know, we do have very similar taste profiles as well, which I think is really important. I am not whiskey obsessed. I love the cocktails and all of that side of things, and the vodka and obviously the gin that we produce, and his absolute passion is whiskey as well. I definitely leave that more to him. But in reference to my understanding of the industry and my taste profile, he has really guided me on that. But that's been for many, many years.
And were you still enjoying the work that you'd done in fashion and beauty? Were you still enjoying that industry, or had you reached a point where you were like, I kind of want to do something that's different?
No, I mean, I still love the industry, and I actually, I have one private client that I've kept that I've been working with for a long time, and I just work in an advisory capacity for her. That's an international children's business. That's very strategic and on the side. But for me, it was more about having my own business and creating that. And there is no way I ever really thought it would actually be in the hospitality industry. But it just made perfect sense. And I think, you know, when there's, it sounds so incredibly cliched, but when you have that crossroad of, okay, do I actually go to New York and continue, you know, on the path that I'm on and, you know, work in an industry that I'm familiar with? Or do I take this opportunity to build and create something with my brother that we're both very passionate about and love, and we actually not only create the business, but we manufacture and produce the product as well? You know, it was just an opportunity that if we didn't do it then, we were never going to do it. And it just felt like the right thing to do.
You're a couple of years in now. Are you both still loving it as much as you were when you started? Because I have a sister, and we're very close. But I think if we went into business together, it might be short-lived.
Well, I'm not going to disagree entirely with you on that. However, yes, we are still enjoying it. It's been interesting for us because we actually only launched OCD 6 months before COVID hit. So we've actually traded longer during a global pandemic than not. And I think that puts pressure on any relationship or partnership that you have. And I think it's a testament to both of us and to the product that we produce that we're still here. And also that, you know, there's certainly been times where we've had to go, okay, I'm walking around the block or you're walking around the block. You know, those things obviously happen. But all in all, I think our advantage has been that we were brother and sister and that we were able to be so incredibly open and relaxed with each other as we needed to be, having launched a brand so close to a global pandemic. And, you know, sort of jokingly, not jokingly, we kept looking at our risk and mitigation page that we'd put together for the business going, global pandemic, what do we do? And, of course, that wasn't there. And just like the rest of the world.
I don't think you're Robinson Crusoe there. Yeah.
Exactly. And just like the rest of the world, you know, we just had to go, okay, this has happened. What can we do? How are we going to protect ourselves, our brand, each other? And I think, you know, that sort of protection mechanism that you have in a family as well was really important and really helped us get through it. And thank goodness, touch wood, all those things, we're still here.
When you look at the industries that you've been involved in the past versus the drinks industry, what are the sort of parallels that you see in terms of, you know, design aesthetic of making a bottle look really good when it sits on the shelf?
Yeah.
I suppose that's universal across, for example, beauty or drinks.
It is. You're absolutely right. And I think, you know, for me, I love design. All of the businesses that I've worked in and had the, you know, the privilege to manage and run have all had a highly creative base. So most of them have had either a creative director or an internal design team that I've worked with. And so from that side of things, the aesthetic of how we wanted OCD to look was a very, not easy. I don't think creating a brand is easy, but it fell into place really quickly for me. I'm very clear about what I like from a design perspective. I'm very clear about the positioning piece. And the thing about the brands that I love, that I've worked in and that I just admire, they all have really great stories to tell. And the thing about OCD is the storytelling part of the brand is really important. And the correlation of businesses that I've run in the past and been a part of and what I love, this is almost the same. It's just a different product. The positioning piece is the same. How I wanted to work to create the design and create the story and the website and how we want to be interacting with people is very, very similar to what I've done in the past. And, you know, this is a brand that we always wanted to have local success with, but also international. So again, that sort of fits into what I've done in the past. And I think, you know, when you look at exactly to your point, and I actually did go and stand in every bottle shop I could find, and I would just stand there for hours on end. I don't know what the staff in those stores used to think about me. I thought somebody at some point is going to put a monitor on me. But I would just stand there and look at all of the labels, all of the boxes, exactly as I would comp shop a fashion retailer or beauty. What were the staff talking about? If I would ask them their favourites, why were they their favourites? What design? Like, I would just ask the staff, what designs do you like in here or what's working? And I'm sure they thought I was mad, but I didn't really care. And, and I would just see what looked great and what I liked and how we could stand out and how our brand that was in my head, how is that going to fit into to what I was seeing in the market?
Yeah, and what were your observations then about what was already around?
I mean, I think that's a... It was really interesting for me to see the positioning between local and international and just sort of looking at that split of products, like what was produced here and what wasn't. And what was exciting to see was that there was a huge appetite, or it felt like there was a really big appetite for locally produced spirits. So that was really exciting. And then just sort of looking at the price points, the packaging, the bottle shapes, all of those sorts of things were really... I already had a clear vision about what we wanted because we'd been talking about it for so long. But then seeing how that would sit comparatively, I guess, gave me a sense of comfort that what we were wanting to do was right in the market and that we would also have a point of difference as well.
Julie says that in setting up Ottercraft Distilling, she had some important ethical considerations from her time in the fashion industry.
So in fashion, there's obviously a huge amount of focus on making sure that your suppliers are audited and, you know, you pay everyone the right amount of salary and superannuation and there's no slave labour and, you know, all child labour and all of those things are really important. And I guess the one thing that is really important to me and obviously to my brother, but that's critical with OCD, is knowing all of our suppliers and paying fair trade and just, you know, really respecting the ingredients that they've given to us. No matter how big or small we ever get and, you know, whether there's global domination or not or however that looks, if we stay as we are, you need to make sure that the mechanics of that can be scaled correctly and that, you know, you just are respectful of everybody that's a part of your supply chain and the consumer and your friends. You know, I want to have this in my house and I want to be proud of it. I want, you know, when you're drinking it and your friends and my friends and family, I just want them to know that the experience they're having is a reflection of all of the hard work that we've put in, but that, you know, people were respected along the way for everything that they contributed into that. So you make that choice in fashion, in beauty and in our industry today.
I suppose with the name that you decided to go with, Ottercraft Distilling, you could either go with, you know, the name that you had and play on that or choose not to. So tell me about the thinking that you kind of had there.
So our last name is Otter.
Yeah.
And it's an Austrian, so we're half Austrian. And it's funny because overseas, if you're in Holland or Austria or, you know, those sorts of countries, it's actually not an unusual name at all. And here it is a little bit more unusual. And we sort of spent our whole lives growing up sort of drawing little otters or saying to people it's Otter, like the animal, not Otter or Otto. And so I guess we were just sort of having a bit of a giggle as well about how we've grown up, what our name is. We always wanted to call out that we were a craft business. That was really important. And the distilling part was also, I guess it just sort of really clarified who we are and what we actually do. We distill product, we're a craft business, and this is our last name. And it sounds pretty simple in a sentence now. We actually spent quite a bit of time thinking about that because we wanted the label to actually really represent who we are. We're a family business, we're a craft business, and we're in the distilling industry. So that it actually made sense when we really looked at it. The OCD piece, I mean, it is, you know, you can have a bit of a giggle about that as well and the little otter that goes with it. But in actual fact, it just sort of formed its own story because we didn't want to shy away from the Ottercraft distilling. We just felt that that really represented who we are and what we're doing. And, you know, it makes sense both here and internationally as well.
And the bottle that you chose to go with is quite distinctive as well.
Yeah.
It's got almost sort of like a ye olde medicine bottle kind of feel about it, I would say.
So the bottles for both the vodka and the whiskey and now our gin, but predominantly when we were launching it was obviously with the whiskey and the vodka. And as you know, there's, and as I was educated in, there's a, you know, there's obviously some laws and what you do need to be doing around, you know, the flint glass and all of those sorts of things that you need to have. And then from a design perspective, to be honest, I just sat down and went through, I've got that many mood boards and Pinterest boards and ideas on bottles, and then just sat with Edward and said, of everything that I love, what's legal to do in a bottle with what you want to make? Because, you know, I had everything from the most ridiculous artisan bespoke fragrance style bottles through to, you know, these really almost like lamps. And so he was like, okay, so none of that is legal and we've got to do, you know, these sorts of things. And then we just looked through pages of designs that we really liked, and, you know, the whiskey bottle is almost, you know, like a pour, it's so beautiful to hold. And I guess one of the important things for us was to have a bottle that a guy can hold really easily, but also that a girl can, because we're a male, you know, male and female owned business. You want something that's comfortable for both as well. That was actually really important to us. And I guess from my background as well, you know, when you hold a piece of clothing in particular in your hand, or when you're putting on makeup or something like that, it is actually about how it holds and feels. I think that's really important. I don't know if that's too arty-farty, but for me, I was like, I want to be able to hold the bottle and give it to my friends and be really comfortable with it as well. But, you know, we want a guy to be able to hold it and, you know, be able to pour it easily and enjoy it as well. So those sorts of things came into the design, and we did want something that just looked a little bit different.
Sure. Now, as you say, Edward was very much driven by whiskey. Were you, you know, driven by wanting him to create certain products that you enjoy drinking more?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he loves cocktails and vodka as well, and that's why those two were the first. The gin was always going to come, and as you know, we've just recently launched that, but when it's just two people and we're doing pretty much everything in the business together on our own, and there was a few little timing setbacks with COVID. And what we do agree on are the flavour profiles. So with the vodkas, which are all single malt, so those in themselves are quite unique, and it's quite unusual to have a full suite of single malt vodkas. We wanted the flavours to reflect things we both love. So I love citrus. So after the pure vodka, we made the cocoa and the coffee, because we both love cocoa and coffee, love chocolate, love coffee, love citrus. So we had the lemon drop. I love hibiscus and rose. I love all of those sorts of quite sweet flavours. So then 23 came about in the vodka range. So the flavours really reflect very much. We both have to love those flavours. And particularly with the vodkas, I did say, you've got the whiskey first. This is what, you know, this is what I love. And so those sort of, they reflect what I really like to drink and eat.
So did you say you distill the vodka from scratch, from grain?
Yeah. So the strength of OCD, we think, and what was really important to us when we were putting the brand together, was that it's a sustainable and traceable brand. So in all of the fashion and beauty brands that I've been a part of, that's really important to me. The efficacy of how you make a product is just as important as what the product is. And so all of our grain is sourced and malted in the Riverina. It all comes from James Kite's farm. We know we can basically GPS track where the paddock is that it comes to each bottle. And then the distilling process is exactly the same for the whiskey and the vodka. Obviously, the whiskey is barreled after new make, and the vodka is distilled again for a third or fourth time, and then it's either made into, you know, all the different flavour profiles that it's made into, the way in which we then seal the bottles, everything's, you know, got a cork closure. We I loved the idea of having a beautiful embossed ribbon and to hand wax all of the bottles. Those sort of end pieces to each of the product as well just really add to the experience that we then hope everybody then has with it as well. So right from how we source it, how it's made, to that end experience. And, you know, just going back to your question about the design piece and everything as well, I have a normal obsession, I'm sure, with online shopping. And I think that when you buy a product, you know, how it arrives to you, how you get to open it, how it's packaged is really important. So that was a lot of that you sort of see in our product piece as well around, you know, that there's everything is tissue wrapped with a sticker. You know, we box it as beautifully as we can, as you know, it's what we like, and we hope that everybody who buys it likes it as well. So if you buy online or in store or whatever it is, we hope that your experience really reflects all of the care and love that we've put into the product.
When you opened your doors, I'm sure you would have assumed from the outset that, you know, cellar door was going to be very important. And in fact, I've been and visited right before COVID happened. What did that mean for you from a distribution point of view of how to reach people and get your products out there without really having a cellar door for that period?
That was really tough because having launched so close to COVID, the plan that we had was really about going into venues first, launching online. So we had our website, thank goodness, going into venues and letting people just understand who we are a little bit on that side of things before really going into the bottle shops, which felt like a really great plan at the time. And then obviously with COVID, we weren't in very many bottle shops at all. And obviously they didn't want to hear from a new brand at that time. And we couldn't have people in. And we didn't have a really big database because we'd only just launched. And all the venues we were in closed. So there was a few little question marks about how we were going to do this. And I guess, so we did two things. We started to produce hand sanitizer, which we still make today. And that was a different stream and a different avenue of people to talk to. And we were selling that to schools that were still open, to the police and those sorts of things. So one way or another, the name was still there a little bit. We were also working really hard to maintain all of the relationships that we had started to have. So for us, that was really about, and we didn't sell a lot of alcohol. We didn't sell alcohol for a few months, to be honest. Like there was nowhere to sell it to. We had some small online sales happening, which was really fantastic. And then we worked really hard on growing our Instagram following and Facebook and letting people know about that. And then slowly we started to see some online sales dripping through with that, which was fantastic. The hand sanitizer got us through, which was great. And we made that to World Health Organization standards because we thought, well, if we're going to do it, we'll do it in a way that we can keep going with it even after COVID if we need to. And so we still sell that today. And
the market's pretty flooded these days though, isn't it?
Could not be more flooded. They could not be more flooded because it literally went from, like, as you know, outrageous amounts of money for the smallest amount of product to just being so flooded once the supply chain opened up again and all the ports opened up and container after container came in. But, you know, you've just got to sort of ride the wave of that and just go, well, okay, we'll just sort of keep, you know, you just have to keep manoeuvring. And I guess our advantage in being small was that we could do that. We could really sort of move, and it's just Edward and I. We could make a decision on the spot and just do it. We didn't have to ask anyone else or do anything. So, you know, I think between that and also, you know, really fortunate during that time, we were approached to do some podcasts, which was really exciting. And, you know, through those, we got out to an audience that hadn't heard of us before, and there was enough interest to pick us up. And I guess the one good thing that happened for us before COVID hit was we achieved some great results and some gold and silver medals in the Australian International Spirits Competition. And so having that, we were able to let people know that, you know, we had been tested in the market, we had been judged, people were valuing what we were doing. So as the market started to open up again, we were able to let people know that we got picked up by some bottle shops, you know, word of mouth started to happen. And then, you know, we got into some great groups like Corkscrew Cellars, Fine Wine Group, those sorts of places, which has been incredibly helpful for us. And then as venues slowly started to reopen again, we're able to be back in there again, get all their teams in for tours and training again. Very slowly, you know, as every government regulation opened up, we were there straight away.
So feeling a lot more optimistic now about the future than maybe you were this time last year?
Yes, that is a definite yes. And I guess, you know, it's really, like everyone, it was, you know, it was a really scary time for everyone. And we were, you know, we had to talk to our landlord, who was fantastic, but we, you know, every single week saying, we can pay, we can't pay, can you put this on hold, can we do that? Like, you have to be willing to have some really transparent conversations with people. But, you know, fortunately, we were able to self-sustain ourselves. I think that's been really important for us. And, you know, the product, we don't think, has lost visibility from when we launched. It certainly didn't gain it. It did hit a pause button for us. But I think people really appreciated, you know, the work that had gone into producing OCD, and they do want to support us. And, you know, we maintained those relationships, and, you know, we were able to launch our gin just before Easter. So, you know, we haven't fallen, we've obviously fallen behind our original plans, but we're still able to activate our original plans, which I think is exciting.
And you've come out with a gin with very different branding, which sounds like it was, once again, very well thought through. Tell me about the Mary Street branding.
Yeah, so we're on Mary Street in St. Peter's. Yeah. That's our address. And the reason we're calling the gin Mary Street Gin, and we've launched with a Sydney Dry Gin, and we'll continue to add to that portfolio of flavour profiles. Everything around Ottercraft Distilling is around locally sourced produce. And so that starts with the barley that's in the Riverina for us. And gin by its nature is international. So when we looked at all of the keywords and everything that was around OCD being, you know, the traceability of it and local and all of those sorts of things, the one thing we couldn't put into the gin was local, because we don't grow juniper in Australia. A lot of the ingredients are international, which we love, and we can still make sure that they're sustainable and source as many organic ingredients as we can and know all of our producers and you know, pay fair trade to everyone. All of those things can still be done, and they're really important to us. But we can't locally source all of the ingredients. So we thought, okay, gin by its nature is international, so we'll keep all of the really important parameters and the efficacy of OCD, and we'll call it something else. And so then it was like, well, what would we call it? And we actually had come up with the name a while ago. And I just think, you know, it's just a really nice ode to where we are. I think it's respectful of where we are. You know, we love the community that we're a part of, and we think it translates, again, locally and internationally.
Yeah, you are part of a nice little community there. It's Precinct 75, I think it's called, isn't it? With Willie the Boatman's there.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to think who else is around. But is that worked well for the business, having those kinds of neighbours?
Yeah, it has. It's been fantastic. So there's a lot of, as you said, Willie the Boatman's there, and Pat's fantastic and a big supporter of the brand. There's some beautiful homeware stores along the front of Mary Street. There's a lot of designers inside as well. Pre-COVID, there was about 500 people working in the precinct. Not so many now, but slowly getting back to that. And for us, I think being in a community where there's a lot of business owners that are there, a lot of creative owners as well, there's a huge amount of respect and understanding of what everyone is trying to achieve there. And with that, you gain a lot of support from people around you. And it's just really lovely where there's a lot of, you know, there's quite a few startups in there as well. There's people who have had huge success with their brands and businesses. There's people who have been there for a really long time. Most importantly, there's a cafe on site. That was number one. And thank goodness they traded through COVID. But, you know, it's nice to be able to walk outside and say to people, oh, we're thinking about this, or can you taste test that for us? Or you've got an instant audience of tasters, I can tell you that right now.
Yeah.
And which has been fantastic. And so I think especially when you're working with one other person, and especially how that ended up being during COVID, there was still a tight number of people who were legally allowed to work through COVID in the precinct. So it was really nice for us as well, because obviously we'd just go into work, but because we were making hand sanitizer and, you know, doing things like that. And we were able to bring in some of the hospitality staff who had actually lost their jobs during COVID in that time as well, which was great. And then see those other guys in the precinct and to still have their support and everything now, as we, you know, we love to support them as well, has actually been really fantastic.
It's a pretty small distillery that you've got there and a pretty small space you're working from. You mentioned just before that you are starting to look around to raise a bit of capital. And what does the next phase look like for OCD?
We've got two sites now in the precinct. So we've got our distillery and another site where we do our filling and things like that. And I guess the next phase for us, as you mentioned, is about scaling up. So the plan to grow OCD and to really hopefully grow locally first and then have some international growth. Again, that's sort of been in the pipeline as part of our plan really from the start. Obviously, from a timing perspective with COVID, you sort of had to throw those plans out and say, okay, if we can do this piece now and then we can move and do that, and just sort of we've had to be quite flexible around that, but that's led to our talking to some interested parties around investment. And, you know, we're excited that we're having some good conversations at the moment with that, which is great. And, you know, again, I feel very fortunate that in my background, I've been exposed to some really exciting areas around equity and growth of big business, but also smaller creative brands as well. So working on that with some external parties and talking to some great people. So we're very clear about how the scale to grow will look. I think you have to be if you want to talk to somebody about investing, or if you're certainly for us with only myself and my brother, you have to be pretty clear as to what those goals look like and how you want to achieve them. It's okay if that moves around a little bit, but I think you need to know what your starting point is and where you'd like to end. And so that's very much a focus for me in particular at the moment.
And is that about increasing production, having a bigger hospitality type space, putting more whiskey down for Edward?
Absolutely.
Are all of these things part of those discussions?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. You're absolutely right. And the whiskey is the absolute backbone of OCD. You know, it's exciting for us that every barrel we release is sold out.
And that's continued since, you know, I remember when I was in there that, you know, Edward was telling me that, you know, barrel to barrel, everything was getting snapped up, and that's kind of continued.
And every barrel we released during COVID sold out.
Yeah.
We have a lot of pre-sales on our barrels, which is really exciting. And we have a lot of loyal customers. We will always put their bottles aside for them. We've had some venues that have supported us the whole time. Their bottles will always be put aside as well. But we basically have the next four barrels pre-sold.
Yeah, nice.
Which is fantastic, and there's never an issue. And the interesting thing, you know, going through a pandemic, you try and find any positive you can, right, is that the thirst for whiskey certainly didn't go away. We found that the pressure point of that did not impact us at all. Every barrel we put down or said we were going to release just sold out almost within 2 weeks.
Yeah, wow.
Which has been really exciting. So definitely for us, you know, the focus on barrels and all of those really fantastic conversations. And I actually love the story of the barrels because I love where they come from and I love the farms that they come from and our local barrels, our international barrels, the Cooper that we work with. You know, they're all beautiful stories that you can tell as well. And definitely they're a huge part of the future of OCD. Absolutely.
Have any of the other products that you've released really kind of surprised you with the sort of, you know, market demand that you've seen for them?
Yeah, I mean, I guess what surprised me is I thought there would, so in reference to the vodkas, I thought with the number of flavour profiles that we have, there'd be a clear winner. I thought, you know, something's going to absolutely stand out. Certainly the pure vodka is the number one seller for us. But I thought, you know, maybe the others would be so much less, or there would just be some obvious differences between them from a sales perspective. But interestingly enough, they all sell quite evenly, certainly to different venues. Not every venue buys the same flavour profile set. You know, they all tend to buy different ones. But when you look at the total amount that's sold, it's really quite even. And I think, you know, one thing that did make me laugh a little bit was our gold leaf vodka. So that's just, you know, I just said to Edward, I think it'd be hilarious if we did a gold leaf vodka because I love gold and it'll look like a snow globe. And we did it as a bit of a giggle. It's a full sheet of 24 carat edible gold leaf and it goes into our pure vodka. So it tastes exactly, obviously, like pure vodka, but we dip it in gold and it looks quite special. And that has sold so well.
Has it?
That has been amazing.
Don't underestimate the power of a gimmick.
Do not underestimate that. And I think, you know, because we have a laser etching machine in-house, so we can personalise anything. So a lot of people love it and they buy them for weddings and birthdays and gifts, and then we can put your name on it and little messages on the back. And we do all of that sort of stuff for free. And again, that's just another, you know, I think that's a beautiful touch point. It's like, again, going back to my fashion and beauty background, you know, that level of personalization and touch point on your products, people really love and appreciate. So we wanted to continue to do that here. So we do that and people really love it. But interestingly enough, also going back to your question, our gin has had a huge success from its launch only a few weeks ago. So we've been so grateful and appreciative of that. That's been really exciting for us.
Well, Julie, thanks so much for joining us for a chat.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been fantastic.
The Drinks Adventures podcast is produced by me, James Atkinson, with additional production and mixing by Dave Robertson. You can find complete transcripts, links, and other information on the show at drinksadventures.com.au. You can follow me on all social media platforms at by James Atkinson. Like my Facebook page, James Atkinson Drinks Adventures, to be kept informed of podcast giveaways and other news about the show. The Drinks Adventures podcast needs your support as listeners. Please do us a favour and leave an honest review and rating for the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. We love hearing your feedback and it helps inform other people this is a show worth listening to. Or simply drop us a line at hello@drinksadventures.com.au.